Okay, 3, 2.
3, 2, hit it!
It's time to double down with Max and Stacy on Sputnik Radio. Coming up on the show, we talk to Rick Ackerman of rickackerman.com. But first, as always, it's time to hear from Stacy with the hot headlines of the day.
Well, Max, you know we have been having riots in the streets, but there has also been a bloodbath on the street. That is Wall Street, of course. We had a tech bloodbath at the end of last week. So things are turning volatile. The VIX index, the measure of volatility, soared, of course. New job numbers, however, did surprise on Friday. They were up 1.4 million. Unemployment rate fell down to something like 8.4%. It was expected to be 9.8%. So that was a big surprise on the upside. Market Watch calls it stock market's got a well overdue thumping with big tech leading the way south. The technical expression is a downward correction in overbought stocks after an intense period of one-way price action higher, said Jeffrey Halley, senior market analyst at Asia Pacific. For the rest of us, the market was long and wrong, and now some of their profit and loss is gone.
Yep. Well, you know, not too surprising, really. Prices got way out of hand. You know, you got a couple of stocks now, valuations in the trillions of dollars. It's pretty big news there. But seems like a pullback, maybe a correction, 20%. And as you know, you can't taper a Ponzi scheme. So I don't think interest rates are going to go up. And as long as rates are effectively zero, then that means that there's no top to these stocks.
Well, in fact, that did become an issue when the good jobs numbers came out. The market sank further because people were concerned that the Fed was not going to continue to bail out markets. So, you know, the guy who knows a lot about markets is Rick Ackerman of rickackerman.com. He used to be a market maker out in the Pacific Exchange. You could also find his work at rickackerman.com, where he has Rick's picks and his hidden pivot technical analysis. So let's turn to Rick and ask you, you know, the VIX is soaring. Markets have been started to become volatile again, and they were tumbling Thursday and Friday, led by the tech sector. Is this the beginning of something bigger, or is it just a normal correction?
Well, first, let me say thanks for inviting me on. We're actually in the same time zone now, and for a while we were in the same state of North Carolina. Concerning the market, it's certainly coming down hard, and the big question on everybody's mind is, this the start of a big one? You use the word correction, and I think that's the general perception right now, that however hard the stock market comes down, it's a correction, meaning it's kind of healthy. It needed to come down just so that it can be bought again. So I'm not a big believer in that, and I think that if I were Mr. Market trying to set the hook, the next rally is going to be a doozy. It's going to suck everyone in, and I think it'll be the ultimate bull trap. I'm not just sort of flapping my yap about that. I've sort of shifted my focus from Apple to the dollar. And the idea was that if you get Apple right, you get the market right. It's a stock all institutions own. But I think the dollar is the much more important thing. And the dollar is the place really where the hook gets set. You talked about 0% interest rates kind of setting the floor under the market, creating eternal buying. But a point that I would make that we saw demonstrated in part during the great financial crisis 2007 and 8 was that low interest rates, particularly low mortgage rates, were not necessarily a protection against disaster. And my theory right now is that the dollar has made an important turn, and everybody who owes dollars is going to be feeling the squeeze. And not only that, but if you get a mortgage rate down around 1% and you think that's cheap, just wait till your home price starts falling 10 or 20 or perhaps 30 more percent as it did in 2007 and 8. So I think that's where the trap is.
Right, right. So, Rick, you say the dollar's made an important turn. Turn which way?
Well, it's turned up, and the dollar has been in a pretty lengthy correction. If you look at the a chart of the dollar index going way back, I've been expecting eventual valuation on the dollar up around 120. The dollar index currently trading 93. off a recent low somewhere around just below 91.80. So the dollar has rallied now for four straight days, which is somewhat unusual. And it's still a little bit early to say the dollar has made a major turn. But if it does, if it has, the last thing in the world anybody wants right now is a strong dollar.
Yes, let's continue on the dollar because, you know, that's been in the news. Not only did Chinese media just report that the Chinese government has plans to sell off 20% of their treasuries in order to diversify their reserves, Goldman Sachs itself as well also pointed out that the price of gold, which has moved quite higher in the last two quarters, that this is signaling that there will be problems with the dollar. Bank of America just said that they predict gold prices will be over 3,000 by this time next year. And Warren Buffett himself, of course, the biggest bull on America in American history, probably, he's just diversified out, you could say. Like, he sold a lot of his bank shares and he went long Barrick gold and also long the Japanese market by buying 5% of the top five trading companies, the conglomerates there in Japan. So what are all these, you know, what are these signals telling you? Because also Ray Dalio, for example, the biggest hedge fund in the world, he's moved into 20% of his portfolio is in gold bullion, at least the gold bullion ETF. So, you know, if these are the elephants in the investing room and they're heading for the hills, should we run from a tsunami? What are they seeing that, you know, some other people might not?
Well, I don't think it ever hurts to be on the same side of the market as Ray Dalio and Warren Buffett. It's hard to argue which one is smarter, but they both really know what they're doing. Buffett would be more convincing. You know, he's been notoriously, if not an outright gold bear, he's always kind of hated the stuff. And so what he's put into it so far is really just a token investment in Barrick. He certainly hasn't gone into gold to the extent that Ray Dalio has, but I think they're both on the right track there. And even though my own outlook has been very deflationary, stronger dollar, I see the crisis aspect of it providing an offset to gold and silver. In other words, even as the dollar strengthens, you're going to see gold and silver be a best performing asset. But for the time being, you know, gold is just kind of biding its time. And you can see sellers have had a lot of trouble pushing it down. But the big problem, as I suggested, is a strong dollar, because it's going to take all debt and kind of revalue it. The burden of debt is going to increase. And that's my, I judge deflation not so much by money supply, which who knows what that is anymore, but by the real burden of debt. And the deception here is that the loosening, the central bank easing everywhere that's putting so much money into the system is somehow significant with respect to inflation. I don't think it is. I think that the deflationary juggernaut is hugely larger than the $3, $5, $10, $15 trillion that is being injected into the system now. The larger juggernaut of deflation is, I think, most apparent in the derivatives market, which is about $1.5 trillion. So that's the implosionary force, and it makes all these trillion-dollar stimulus packages look like nothing.
Right. You mentioned the real burden of debt and how you look at that in terms of talking about deflation. And let me ask you this. So the U.S. dollar, of course, is debt. And so by printing lots of new debt money, isn't that increasing the real burden of debt? And this objective of the Fed to get the inflation rate higher by printing or releasing more debt, isn't that an oxymoron?
Well, they're having to print more and more to do the job. You know, there was a time coming out of World War II when you could correlate each new dollar of borrowing to some, it took 56 cents of borrowing, I think, to create a dollar's worth of real growth. At the time I wrote a piece on this for Barron's in the late 1990s, it took about $2.50 of borrowing to create a dollar's real growth at the margin. But since then, we've gone off the deep end. We've gone off the charts, I should say. And, you know, the amount of money the Fed has to have borrowed into the system to create that growth. You can't even measure it anymore. You know, it could be on the order of $60, $70, $80 of borrowing just to create one real dollar of growth. But of course, we're so fixated on the illusion, these stocks going nutty like Apple with a $2 trillion plus valuation, that we don't even, we conflate that with growth, but it's not. It's just asset inflation. So everybody's sort of focused on the wrong thing. And even with the Apple split, you can only see it the cynical way, that it's split simply because the big boys want out and they need to create a cheaper stock that the Robinhood guys can all start buying. So that's what's happening.
We saw similar with Tesla this week. I know you're kind of a fan of Elon Musk, I think, of the entrepreneurial spirit of him, but his stock price, Tesla, is up. It was up 5.5-fold, but now I think it's 4.5-fold since the March low. So what do you think about those stock splits? They use a stock split to dump $5 billion of new stock onto the market. Like, what happens with Tesla next? It's down 20% in the last week or so. So what do you see next?
Well, you know, initially we had pretty good rallies after the split. Just for a couple of days when Apple split, it got bought up enormously. The percentage gains for the first couple of days were bigger than what we'd seen when it was a $500 stock. But there's really only one purpose of a split. It's to essentially broaden the base, bring more shareholders in. You make the stock cheap enough that the Robinhood guys can afford it. Even then, it takes a year to distribute $1 trillion worth of Apple, probably longer than that, because you're doing it, so to speak, one nickel and dime at a time. So Tesla and Apple are both grotesquely overvalued. The irony being, I do think Musk is great. I think he's great. But the irony is that Tesla could wind up being undervalued if their battery storage solution turns out to be truly revolutionary. If Tesla finds a way that we can sort of cruise forever on, so to speak, solar panels, then, you know, there's no estimating what Tesla's worth. But just on a basis of what is now, you know, the valuations for Tesla and Apple are absurd.
Yeah, cruise forever. Boy, that sounds like a fine future. So let's talk about this USO, which is an ETF that covers the oil market, U.S. oil. And of course, you're a former market maker. You know the intricacies of these things. Do you have any thoughts on what happened in terms of the role of the structure of the ETF and causing the negative oil prices back in April? If you were covering that, Rick, your thoughts?
Well, I think you have to look at crude as just another central bank hoax. You know, if they need to get the price of anything up, it's crude, because coming out of the 2007-08 crash, the financialization guys looked around and they said, well, what can we hock up to our eyeballs? And they hawked energy resources. They essentially borrowed against them. They leveraged against them. A lot of that $1.5 trillion derivatives market is collateralized with energy resources. So the world desperately needs for crude prices to be higher, but ultimately supply and demand will determine that. And whatever little recovery you're having in China, the marginal buyer and crude, it's not going to make enough difference in demand to push the price up. So I would look for crude to decline, and pretty much every trend that's been in place since March 23rd is going to reverse if the dollar keeps moving higher. And that includes the rally in crude that's taken place since March 23rd.
Okay, final thoughts in the last few moments here. What do you think for the third quarter? Do you have any calls for the post-election? If it's Biden versus Trump, will there be any difference in the market reaction to that?
I think it's going to be Trump in a landslide or by a significant margin. And I do feel that if the market saw it any differently, the Dow would be trading 15,000 points lower. So it certainly hasn't sniffed a Biden victory, even if the pollsters have. But I think that the sigh of relief that investors breathe when Trump wins is going to be a false. They're about to get clobbered after that.
Right. Rick Ackerman, one of the best guys out there if you're trying to keep up with these crazy markets, of rickackerman.com. Thanks so much for being on Double Down. And that's it for this episode of Double Down with me, Max Keiser, and Stacey Herbert on Sputnik Radio. Again, thanks to Rick Ackerman of rickackerman.com. Until next week, bye, y'all.